Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Scott Burton, your host today on the show. And our first guest is a very special chairwoman for the National Endowment for the Arts, Marianne Carter. She's asked me to call her Marianne. Ben Brown is also here. He calls her Madam Chair. Ben Brown, Marianne Carter, welcome to the show. It's so nice to have you both here.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Very good to be here, Scott. Yes.
And Ben sent me the schedule of your time here in Juneau. And if I know Ben, he's kept you very busy.
It has been a whirlwind tour, but I couldn't be more thrilled to be here. This is my first visit to Alaska overall. And I'm just thrilled that I could come to Juneau. And I've met so many people. I've gotten to see a lot of the site visits, met a lot of grantees. And it's just been a great trip.
All right. Well, it's so nice to have you here. We're honored. Ben, tell us which hats you're wearing today.
Well, the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies is an organization that's very supportive of the National Endowment for the Arts. And the National Endowment for the Arts is an organization which is very supportive of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, of which I am chairman. And as almost everyone listening probably knows, we've faced a bit of an existential crisis over the past few months with the veto of all of our funding. But that was all restored by the legislature towards the end of the second special session, which concluded a few weeks ago. So as of today, I'm cautiously optimistic that the governor's office will reconsider its prior decision to veto that funding and that we will be able to reopen ASCA's offices. But I won't know. I think we're hearing now that Monday it's likely when there's going to be some announcements about that. So I'm here in a number of different capacities, but I guess to go back to Marianne's being in town, you know, each state and jurisdiction of the territories, including Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, have a state arts agency. And Alaska, if ours were to go away, would be the only state or territory without one. And that's something that I know I don't want to see and that Marianne and the National Endowment for the Arts doesn't want to see either.
And it's really important to know that 40% of our funding by law goes to the states. And there's a formula that determines how much each state will get. But the state will only get the money, or the Arts Council will only get the money, if it's matched with a state appropriation. And so I think typically, Ben, it's about $700,000
yes.
that we provide to Alaska. So that money will go away from Alaska.
Okay. I happened to see your talk online about arts and rural prosperity, and it sort of relates to this. And in that talk, Ben, I think you were in the audience on Capitol Hill.
I was a co-presenter with
okay.
Marianne, yes.
You did talk about the importance of arts in rural communities. Can you sort of tell our audience a little bit about that? And you were giving some interesting statistics about how communities with acting arts organizations prosper.
So the arts have been a real economic engine for a lot of parts of rural America that have seen whatever their industry had been has faced a downtrend. I was given an example at the chamber luncheon yesterday about a very rural community in North Carolina. It's an old tobacco town that basically died when all the tobacco wars started happening in the late 70s and 80s. And a gentleman used to build what they called whirligigs out of whatever material he could find anywhere, but usually around a farm. And someone had an idea that people would love to see this stuff. And so with an initial grant from us and then two additional grants, totaling $100,000 in this extremely small community in rural North Carolina, those investments and this park built up with these whirligigs generated $20 million in investment into the community. And so now there's hotels and restaurants and bars and a lot of tourists that now come just to see this whirly park. And so we've also seen it with Bethlehem Steel out in Pennsylvania, you know, an old steel town that – you know, once the steel industry went down in the 80s, became basically a ghost town. And with some of our funding and local community, they recreated an arts community within an old steel mill. And it's, again, brought millions and millions in investment there and reignited a town.
Ben, and we have whirly gigs, don't we, in Juneau?
Yes, we do. And we also have a lot of wind. But I think what's analogous to Southeast Alaska, here in Juneau, we have state and federal government jobs that are quite sizable. And we have two mines. We have Hecla Greens Creek and the Kensington Mine. But when the timber industry went away in Sitka and in Ketchikan in the 1990s, that left a really large hole in their economies. And the one thing that's really helped come fill that back in is the visitor industry. And the visitor industry, as we know, is highly dependent on artistic and cultural activity because people want to come to Alaska to see nature, but they also want to see nature as interpreted by the people who live here, the indigenous residents, the Tlingit people, and also more recent arrivals like me. I was born in Anchorage. But so it's really important to not ever forget how important arts and culture are to rural economies. It gets somewhat taken for granted in places like Seattle or Los Angeles or New York, but you cannot take it for granted when you get to rural America because you do so at the peril of people not having jobs or livelihoods and then seeing communities shrivel up and die away.
Got it. Madam Chair, the story of your sort of attraction to the arts, it sounds like it may have started with your daughter when she was about 7 years old. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I have a background mostly in politics and policy and never really thought about the arts much more than my own music classes. But when my daughter was 7 years old, she was diagnosed with dyslexia. And she has dyslexia pretty severely. And so I knew a traditional education environment wasn't going to be right for her. She would never prosper. And so I started looking around for schools that integrated the arts into the teaching method. As I always say, my daughter would never be able to sit and read a textbook, but she certainly can learn. And so I was lucky enough to find a school that uses the visual arts to teach children with similar learning differences like my daughter. They keep the classes very small, and the teachers are so creative in the ways they come up with to teach a child and make, as I always say, now the educational experience for my daughter is productive and enjoyable. And so in my family, the arts are not a luxury. Like I know a lot of people tend to think about the arts. They are a necessity every day of our lives.
And may I ask how old she is now?
She is 15.
Okay.
And I think Mary Ann's experience is true for everyone if they just stop and think about it. Everyone has more of a connection to the arts than at some, first blush they think. And so they're not a frill for anyone. They really are necessary to everyone's existence. We've certainly been very fortunate with our friends in the legislature, I think, who recognize that. And so I'm just hoping that members of all branches of the Alaska state government will realize that the arts really matter and are worth supporting.
So indeed, these are challenging times, I think, in a lot of places economically and for the arts. If you had advice for us as a state, Madam Chair, what might that be?
Well, I think I would remind everyone that as much as we love the arts and we love the beauty of the arts, there are several other things that they do. They are an economic engine. The arts bring in $1.4 billion to Alaska's economy. That's 2.7% of the GDP. The arts and cultural sector also employ more than 11,000 people in Alaska, bringing almost $1 billion in wages and benefits. Those are real numbers, and those are real people, and all that should be taken into consideration. The other thing, when we talk about arts not being a luxury, and an area where the National Endowment for the Arts is really focused on, is arts as a part of our health and well-being. We have a wonderful program called Creative Forces, and it provides art therapy to our wounded men and women in uniform who are recovering from traumatic brain injury or PTSD or some other psychological issue. And what we have found, especially based on the success of that program, is we can take that art therapy and now delve into other areas such as pediatric oncology and opioid recovery, for example. And so recognizing that arts play a role in our everyday life, whether it's health, whether it's our well-being, whether it's our education, whether it is just for pure enjoyment, it is crucial to our everyday life.
And it makes medical therapies more effective. Again, it prevents the unnecessary use of drugs to medicate people's conditions. And creative aging is another area. And I wanted to mention that because actually the vice president's wife, Mrs. Pence, has been incredibly supportive of not only our Creative Forces program in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Arts. She is able to visit Jay Baer and our music therapist up there through the Alaska State Council on the Arts. But also she's very interested in creative aging. So I think that's yet another area where you're going to see the Alaska State Council on the Arts if we're able to exist. And we will. I'm confident. I'm just concerned about maybe the short term more than the long term. Creative aging is going to be really important because it helps people keep their faculties about them and prevent dementia and live productive and happy lives as they grow older. And so at any rate, I think, Marianne, you're pointing out that the direct benefits to health and welfare also cannot be overlooked.
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you an interesting story about creative aging. I'll take just a minute, Scott.
Go for it.
I know you have other questions. My father a few years ago was diagnosed with dementia, and he was able to live at home for a few years, but then he had to be placed in a memory care facility. And so as I was looking around for an appropriate facility, I actually ended up choosing a place that provided two art activities a day, because I thought that that was an important part of allowing him to be creative and express himself in ways that were now the new normal in expressing himself. And so and I would go visit, tried to visit as much as possible. And every time I would visit, I would sit in on whatever the art program was. And it was a wonderful little facility, 14 residents. And at least four or five times a week, they would bring a pianist in who would sing songs from their era. And so you had these 14 beautiful people who some didn't know their own names, didn't know the name of their children, but they knew the words to every single song that they grew up with. And it was outstanding to watch. And so while I use our office to maintain a lot of empirical data and we try to get all the research that we can, I have also witnessed it with my own eyes, and it is something to behold. And I really think Ben is right. The creative aging is and when you look at the demographics of the country, it's really something that we can benefit from, I think.
And we all are getting older, as it turns out.
Backing up a little bit to the connection of the NEA with Alaska, I want to talk a little bit about the Arts Endowment, and I understand you got to go to Perseverance Theater today and see a preview maybe of Devilfish, or tell us.
Well, it's only their sixth day of rehearsal, so as an actor, I know what it's like to have people come into the rehearsal process that early. The cast are amazing, one of whom wasn't even there, but Vera Starbard, the playwright, shared with us her vision, where the play had come from, and then we did a little bit of a dance, Marianne.
Yeah, I have to say it is such a beautiful story. I was actually very moved when I heard the history of the story. And so it was really quite an honor for me to be able to go see these actors, hear their stories and some of the things that they've done in the past, but how they all feel about this story in particular and what it means to the community. And I think they told me opening night is September 20th. And I would really encourage everyone to go because there's going to be something special about this, I think. But it was really exciting. They did a scene, and so that was great fun to watch. But it was fun to stand up and learn a couple movements and do a little dance of our own. But I really wish I could come to that opening. I don't think I'll be able to come back for that, but I think that's going to be really special for the community.
Absolutely.
And switching hats as the development director at Perseverance, I'm excited because this is going to be a very successful show, which we need,
Right.
It's artistically meritorious. It's a beautiful story with a bunch of beautiful creative people involved in it, and it's going to wow the audiences here and in Anchorage. So that pleases me on a number of levels.
And where can we get tickets, Ben?
Well, Well, you can get tickets by going to ptalaska.org. We're still actually selling subscriptions. We've extended the early bird rate. James Sullivan, our former box office manager, has left to move to the East Coast because his wife got a job with NOAA's office there. So we're actually recruiting for a box office manager. But so because we had some change in personnel, we wanted to afford people the opportunity to still get that great rate. So you can call 364-2421 and speak to whoever answers the phone to buy a subscription, or go to ptalaska.org.
All right. After this interview, I think you two are heading over to the block party.
Yes. Yeah, right? So if you have not had a chance to meet Marianne yet, please join us at the last summer block party of the season. It's going to be in one of the Sheffield ballrooms, Ballroom 1 in Centennial Hall. And that's because the Juno Lyric Opera production of Cavalleria Rusticana is all set up in the main hall at the Jack. And because we thought the weather was going to be not so favorable. Frankly, I'm always a let's do it outside if we can. But it's the Njuzu Marimbas. So they will be regaling our guests from the National Endowment for the final summer block party, 5:30 to 7 in the Sheffield Ballroom at Centennial Hall.
That sounds wonderful. Madam Chair, Marianne Carter, it's been so great having you here on the show. Real quick, some of our listeners are sure to come to this party. What are things that you like to hear from people that you meet in communities you visit, or questions you like to get?
Well, in particular, I like to hear from our grantees on the impact that their programs have. We talk a lot about, this organization got a grant or this organization got a grant, and then we sort of leave it at that. One of the things that I am really working on is the collective impact. So what is our footprint here? Not, guess what? Four organizations got a grant, but what did those four grants mean? And, you know, I look at our Poetry Out Loud contest. We don't just have a high school competition. We have 11,000 kids from Alaska representing 101 high schools competing in Poetry Out Loud. So being able to broaden the footprint. So when people are able to come up and say, that grant, it actually touched 2,000 people, or we had 55 kids come to the educational program, being able to demonstrate a little more what the grant actually meant. Those are the things that I really love to hear. But I also just love to hear about what people are doing. At the theater today, I loved hearing the backstory of how this play developed. So everyone should feel free to just come on down, and whatever they want to say is fine.
Exactly. It's not a terribly structured thing, and I just want to encourage people to meet Marianne while she's here. I'm so grateful you were able to take time out of your busy schedule to come to Alaska's capital city, and I'm happy you're going to get to go visit some other parts of Alaska up north, where I'm actually from. But as a Southeasterner now, I'm very pleased that Juneau is your first port of call.
Well, thank you. I've just loved this visit.
And what time the block party? What are the hours?
5:30 to 7.
All right. That's the voice of Ben Brown. He's the chair of the National Assembly of the State's Arts Agencies and also the Alaska State Council of the Arts. And we also got to meet Marianne Carter, the chairman for the National Endowment for the Arts. Here on Juno Afternoon, it's been an honor having you both here. Have fun at the block party and safe travels.
Thanks, Scott.
You.